You've spent a decade, right, working for Plowshares.
More, almost 15
more
years
than a decade.
Now.
Certainly editing one of the most important literary journals in the United States, and therefore playing this very important role in the life of American letters. Are there things that you felt like you learned as an editor that helped you with your book, and were there things that you experienced as an editor that just got in your way?
I think both. Should point out, because I'm the poetry editor, but because we have a series of guest editors, my influence is more trivial than the title makes it seem. I just try to sort of guide things and help out with the choosing the guest editors and passing things on to them. So I don't want to make too much of that position, because it's not that grand. But certainly, reading tens of thousands of poems a year has made me very aware that I don't want to be boring. Because I think a huge percentage of poems that come across my desk, I keep thinking, just, well, why? Why were these written? And I can't figure it out. And of course, I can look at a lot of my poems and assume that people would say the same things. And I think over the past few years, I've really devoted myself to sort of saying, at least I'm not going to make that mistake in my poems if I can possibly help it. Is to try to write poems that are interesting and seem to have some reason to exist. Beyond the promotion of some career, which is sadly what I often suspect is the case, the motivation behind a number of poems. And it is also, I think, on the more positive side, I have been aware, even if I'm not personally in contact, of a very large community of people writing poems and admiring them. And it's kept me from being bitter in ways that a lot of people who aren't as involved become, seeing themselves as an outsider. Not that I was a real insider, but there was a sense of a larger community of people who I know, and by knowing other editors, I know all the ones I know are nice people. They're not out to reject it. They're doing it as a labor of love. Whereas I think on the outside of that world, oftentimes it can seem otherwise. And so it's been very useful for me just to be a part of things at some level. And I've also felt I feel like it's public service that I want to give something back. It's such a self-indulgent life, I feel, the writing of poems and even teaching to some degree, that I like the notion of doing something that you hope helps out folks. Of course, as editors, it's probably the least appreciated thing in the world, but it's still something I feel like I ought to do. And so it's been good for me that way, I think, sort of spiritually, just to keep me balanced a little bit.
Is there a kind of poem that you think you've seen altogether too many of?
But I hate to describe them because they start looking like my poems. I'm pretty exhausted by the personal narrative about a relative leading towards some epiphany. It's not that they're not great ones. I just simply, there's so many not great ones. They're just filled with nostalgia.
Whose reason for existing, I think, is simply the bald fact that this happened to me, my mother died, and therefore you should pay attention.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
Well, yeah, and yeah. Then?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. I mean, without, missing any irony, and that just, it baffles me how anyone could be writing a poem these days that didn't have some sense of irony in it, and yet many don't. So those things, and again, God bless them. I don't want to judge them, but it's just, I see so many of those things, I get tired of it. As an editor, too, it sometimes can be difficult if you get hammered by certain types of poems to still remain open to the good ones that seem to be charting that same territory. It's just easy to dismiss.
Well, I know I had some conversations with the very person after whom your prize is named, Larry Levison. I remember talking with him about this, that on the one hand, there's that fact that people, so often, and as you say, God bless them, why would you have any negative feeling towards them? It's just their reason for writing is to create a kind of slightly elaborated diary. And that seems like, well, okay, that's fine, but is it poetry? Then on the other hand, you have these folks who are creating elaborate intellectual enterprises that don't seem to have any connection to life as one actually lives it either. So at the other end of the spectrum, this kind of preciousness or
yes,
esoteric.
Absolutely. Again, it's another thing that baffles me. I think that this is such a—it's not fame, obviously, because even somebody really famous in our world is not really famous by world standards, even by city standards, really. and there's no money, there's really not much prestige. But, you know, again, it's still a beautiful thing that these people are still writing these things that are called poems. The poetry at least draws them, remains something that seems to even a person who might not be a true poet, something that's important enough that they're not going to call it a journal, they're not going to call it a philosophical essay, they're going to call it a poem. So I think that's the positive side. Right. It's amazing. It's amazing how many people are out there writing poems and sending them to magazines.
And not reading it.
Yeah, of course.
Well, you know, it brings me to another question, and partly it's because my graduate students often find the process of putting a thesis together, you know, a collection of poems that will eventually be a first book manuscript, to be, you know, an agonizing process. You know, not so much because they have doubts about their poems, but they're confused about how those poems go together. They're confused about how they go about structuring the collections. And like a lot of my students, you write a number of modes. We've talked about those absurdist, surrealist poems, the prose poems in the third section, and then those more earnest lyrics that are there in some of the others. And you also find ways to give the collection an unusual degree of structural integrity through, they say, the God poems, the Heraclitus epigraphs, the Aeneid poems. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just want you to talk a little bit about how the book was formed. And
sure.
How it came together from a miscellany of poems to a book.
Yes, like a lot of folks, I'll go through a period. I'm writing a certain type of poem, and I think at that moment I've broken through, and all of a sudden I'm into this new world. Everything else I've done is obsolete. I'm a new poet. I mean, it's totally new territory. And then you realize, of course, your friends will tell you this really isn't that different at all. And then I'll go into the next phase. So I've had a series of those phases, thinking that everything was before was obsolete, and then ultimately sort of sensing, wait a minute. And I think this happened around the time that I started thinking of the friendship poems, where I began to sense what was the connection between these things. It seemed to be more important than the style, whether they're prose poems or straight lyric or narrative. And that, once I began to realize that, it gave me a way to begin to manipulate the manuscript. Now, as far as ordering goes, there was tons of concern. I spent a lot of time thinking about if I should mix all the different types of poems up or how I should do it. And ultimately, I decided to keep the poems in sections, and then to use the epigraphs and some of the poems that have repetitive themes just to sort of build bridges between them, so that hopefully there'd be some echoes even from the prose poems to some of the others. And there was a sense, or maybe a post-book justification, that the prose poems in particular, the same sense of loss, of alienation, only placed in a somewhat more, I think, almost contemporary feeling, contemporary setting. And a more contemporary diction. And so once I began to sort of recognize those things, I actually would sometimes go back and weave things into the poems that would sort of try to pick up on some of the other poems in other parts of the collection to give it some sense of narrative. I knew where the book needed to end. I had no idea where it should begin, really, with the collection. It was in a sense persistence. It's all I can say. I wish now I'm writing a book that seems like a book. I started writing it, and it seems it's just as come as a collection. This did just come out just like a first book, only it was gestating for 20 years, 15 years. That time at least gave me a chance to really see and to fiddle with them in a way to try to make it, or create the illusion of something at least that was whole.
That's really quite funny that you're saying that, because many of the students, both undergraduate and graduate, with whom I've talked about this book, one of the things they've pondered is how it's so clearly a book that's made to be a book, that were individual poems to be judged with suspicion or negatively, because they wouldn't have survived as well on their own outside of the book as they did in the structure of the book. Did you write any poems that were written to fill spots in the book, or did the...
Yes. There were a couple. There's one called Father in the prose poem section, and there's one called A Confederacy that's in the friendship section. Both of those poems, I knew that there were things that I hadn't addressed in those sections, and even though I wasn't writing in that style anymore, and I went back and was able... And there are a couple of other poems that are like that, but those are the two that stand out for me. Where I did go back, and I felt like the sections needed to be beefed up a little bit to seem, you know, more like a suite than like an interlude. I mean, I think that I like the poem of Confederacy. I'm not so sure about the other, but certainly there are poems in there that if I were to choose the best poems, I would take them out for exactly those reasons. I don't think that they stand up as poems on their own, but they work in a sense, I hope, you know, to give a little bit of flesh to some of the, especially in the friendship section, to give a little bit more flesh to the book. in my experience with this, it is a lot illusion. That, you know, that it was really a conscious artistic manipulation of the material in order to create the effect of a book. And the second side of it, which is maybe the more esoteric side of it, is that I discovered that this poems are my poems for a reason. I wrote them honestly, and they're real from my experience. There's nothing in there that was an exercise. It's all just what I did. I think because of that, there was, surprisingly, over the course of, you know, a lot of changes in my life, a consistency there that is evident. And so it's sort of given me a sense, just in putting this together, the process, a sense of real faith that what I do is mine, for better or for worse.
You know, I want to pick up both on the issue of first books and also some of the things you were saying about your experience as an editor of Plowshares, and maybe just comment on this very strange situation of poets trying to publish first books today. Yeah. I mean, you know, tens of thousands of manuscripts are making the rounds, and the contests themselves have proliferated, but that isn't always necessarily a good thing, I don't think. And clearly, you know, there are many commendable manuscripts that aren't getting published, and then substandard books that are. And we know that situation. How do you think the situation of this burgeoning number of first books has affected the quality of American poetry, or the state of American poetry? Because it does seem so strange, so puzzle.
I'm not sure how to answer that directly, but something that has really occurred to me as an editor over the past 15 years is seeing, with the proliferation of MFA programs, there has been a much, much more professional poem coming my way. I used to, when I first started editing, I would get these sort of beautiful, gnarly, typed up things, and I still get them from older generations of poets, but now everything is perfect. For the most part, everything is just right. The cover letter's right. The poems look right on the page. They're perfectly done. And I've, what I felt is that there is now such a sense of a career path, that actually being a poet is a career, which is something that, you know, only in the wildest fantasies when I was going through school did you ever consider. But people really seem to deal with it as they do a job, and therefore they're producing these books because they didn't need to be written except for that reason, perhaps. So that's my explanation for it, and also for the sameness. And again, what's happened in my experience has been, it used to be that there would be a certain percentage of very good poems that I would get at Plowshares, and then there would be a second layer, and then a third layer, and then there would be a huge percentage of just really bad stuff. Now I get almost no bad stuff. It's all really in the middle. I get very little good stuff, too. So it's very difficult to sort of sort out, my taste at least, to distinguish between one and another, because they are so similar. So anyway, I think that the production of these books, and even these contests, are just seem to me a response to a need to justify all the MFA programs. You know,
I think the generation of writers who taught me definitely taught resentfully. They taught and comported themselves with at least a public face of being loyal to American anti-intellectualism. They were very eager for you to know, I'm not an academic, and I don't live in the academic world, and I don't operate that way, and I'm not like that, and I've refused more degrees than those other guys have accepted, you know, and kind of things like that. And here we are faulting ourselves for doing our job. You know, and we are producing competent writers out of these programs. You know, they're competent. But maybe it shouldn't surprise us that even with that situation, an overall improvement of raising of all the boats, there still are only these few magical people who are running up to the top of the masthead and shouting out and doing something extraordinary that we all think, well, I couldn't live without that.
Right. But it was ever thus, I assume. The first book contest, of course, is a disaster for all but a handful of people a year. I don't know what a better system would be, but it's not a good system. I think that the second books, because there's so many first book contests, and that's one of the things I love about the Levis Prize, is you open a door. I know more people who had published first books, who can't get their second book published, even after having a reputable publisher and get reasonable reviews or what have you. Most of us are going to write better for second books than first books, but it doesn't matter because the gate is closed. It's a confusing situation. Again, it's one of those things where I feel like it's great that there are all these MFA students. It's great that there's all of it if they only bought books. But on the other hand, I think it has produced a sense of, well, now with the creative writing PhD that's, you know, popping up everywhere, which seems is only, in my view, a cynical response to the fact that so many institutions require the PhD to get a job. Not because it has anything to do with the quality of their writing or anything else. It's simply to get through, you know, the hoops. Back in the days you're talking about, and a lot of the people who are teaching us didn't have master's degrees, and they would get into these institutions. And still, you see it at the upper level institutions, the Harvards. They don't care, but in most of the other jobs, you know, around, you have to have the credential, which is it just sort of saddens me. Although, again, you know, maybe, who knows? It's not the worst life either.
Could you talk about how you're envisioning the second book? Tell me a little bit about that. I know the cliche always is that, you know, the first book is about self-discovery and a second book is about self-acceptance. But it sounds like you've got some very, very specific plans for how the book is going to develop.
It's almost done. I think I'll be finished with a draft of it next week, I think. Again, it's one of those things, it seems really, really different to me. I feel like if this is, you know, again, this is a book that represents almost 15 years of my life, you know, and this new book is something that represents about a year, and it's filled with, I think, a sense of freedom. This book is filled with a lot of responsibilities that I didn't really understand, but responsibilities to my teachers, like Donald Davey, who's hugely influential to me. I was pleasing a lot of fathers in this book, you know, whether they were literal or the ambition to be a poet like Keats or whatever, all those things that are sort of that wanting to prove something to someone, most of them long dead. And I finished this book and I was like, well, what the hell was I doing with that? I can finally just write my poems. And I think that the last poem, The Seven Star Bird, and here was I was beginning to sort of sense that I was pulling away from the other poems. So this book is a lot looser. It's much more contemporary feeling in the sense, I mean, there's a lot of, I'm wearing this Led Zeppelin shirt because there's a tons of sort of contemporary rock and roll allusions and a lot of characters who inhabit the world. But then, you know, there's Dante's in it too. So it's just it feels a lot freer and I think a lot funnier and a lot less about me. Very little of it has to do with my family doesn't seem to be a part of it. That's quite the same way that here in this book, they figure, my sons figure very, very largely for me. So we'll see. It's crazy. I mean, I think I just let the whole insane part of me go wild. And again, well, I'll read some poems tonight. We'll see what you think. It may be a total disaster, but at least it's fun in ways that this book was not fun often. It was painful. And the way I'm writing now, again, just it feels like just the freedom of having this book out has been tremendously exciting for me.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the terrible dangers of this professionalization of writing that you're talking about is that people attain a certain level of competence, and then once you attain that, it's years, decades before you get the pleasure back of writing. Yeah. You know, if the situation is as it exists today, that the pleasure of writing has to be its principal reward, or you're in big trouble.
It's really big trouble. That's right. And it's very difficult to, you know, to have lived in this community without, you know, in the poetry community for all those years and not have a book come out. It's punishing to and it's not just me, it's so many people that I know, and it's awful to have to have that weight on you when it shouldn't make any difference, but of course it does. But I'm glad to be free of it. I hope I can find a publisher.